on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and it is Friday, August 30th, 2024. Now, congratulations is in order for all of us for making it to another weekend, and this one, hopefully for you, as it is for me, a long weekend over the holiday. And as September begins, we should reflect on what has been certainly an interesting month, a month with picked up volatility, a month with, therefore, wider market swings, a month that was still positive, but an eventful month nonetheless. And September brings a lot as well. Potential Fed rate cuts on the horizon, more employment data, more macro data, moving ever closer to an election, which can bring itself uncertainty and change. And so our job is to help separate the signals from the noise, help to move through an inherently uncertain time and interpret and find ways to improve our lives, improve our health, but also improve our financial health. And so today we will do more of the same. We'll bring you some educational items. We'll bring you actionable items. We'll talk about some interesting stories. We'll sum up the month of August and we'll talk about the market. But before we do any of that, before we talk about today's market performance, before we run down today's show topics, and before we answer hopefully some of your live calls and your Invest Talk YouTube comment questions, let's get to our first voicemail call now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I was calling regarding Dell Technologies Incorporated, ticker symbol D-E-L-L, Delta Echo Lima Lima. I was just calling to see what you guys thought of the stock and at what price point would be reasonable to enter it. Intrigued about their role in AI and looking at a good price point to get in on. Thank you.
So D-E-L-L, I don't think I have to tell anybody what Dell is. It's one of the largest computer hardware manufacturers on the planet. My computer that I'm using right now, in fact, is a Dell. And Dell had a particularly good quarterly report a couple days ago, maybe yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. And in that report, they surprised the upside by 10% on revenue, 10% on bottom line EPS, and 3.7% to the upside. Gave some pretty solid guidance. The stock is up 4.33% today. It's up 51% year to date, up 107% on the 52 week. It was down a little bit coming into August on a downward trend. Mid August, it bottomed out at around 87, it looks like, from this chart. I don't have an exact number. And it's been heading higher ever since. And so the question is why? Well, a lot of it has to do with the secular driver that is AI. A lot of it has to do with new partnerships that Dell has undergone related to AI. And so when you think about technology, there are hardware cycles and software cycles where you have two competing things. One is the devices on which things operate, and one is the operation themselves. And eventually, hardware becomes so advanced that you need to advance software. And then software becomes too advanced, the hardware it's run on, and you go back and forth. And we have been in kind of approaching the bottom of the hardware cycle, if you will, if you think of it that way. And a lot of that has also been paired with consumers not spending as much. And so because of that, Dell was trading a lot lower on a relative basis for quite some time. Right now, they're only trading at 13 on price to earnings. They're trading at 0.9. on price to sale. So they're trading at some pretty reasonable ranges. And another indicator for me that now would be an interesting time to add Dell to your portfolio, regardless of the fact that it's up 51% year to date, it's actually down 32% on the 3 month, is interesting guidance from Best Buy as well, talking about their expected consumer demand for all these products that are now going to utilize more and more artificial intelligence. So I think that if you believe in the secular driver that is AI and how that is affecting and will continue to affect software, Well, you're going to need hardware to be sold that can actually operate that software. And so I think Dell looks pretty cheap to me. They don't have a lot of debt. They got about, what, $26 billion of debt on a $78 billion market cap company. And they've been paying a pretty consistent dividend for the past, 3 years, 2.5% back in 2022, where it started, 1.9% last year, projected to be 1.5% this year. So I think this is a name that is pretty stable. Their cash flow has been improving for the past year or so. We're coming out of what is a dearth of new hardware. We're coming out of a cycle in the next 6 months where people aren't spending as much and they will be looking to upgrade. So I think Dell's a good name. I think their earnings 2 days ago or yesterday, if it was, were solid and looking ahead to the future. It's been on my watch list for quite some time. Thanks for the call. Now we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, the last 45 minutes of Invest Talk for the month of August, actually. And the first thing we're going to talk about is my main focus point today, which is about the yuan carry trade. You didn't hear that incorrectly. The yuan carry trade and how it is a rising forex strategy amidst yen weakness. Now, the yuan carry trade is emerging as a viable strategy for investors, particularly as the yen carry trade faces challenges due to Japan's monetary policy. While China's dovish approach and stable interest rates, traders are finding attractive opportunities in the yuan market. This shift highlights the yuan's potential as a more resilient option in the forex landscape, especially in uncertain economic conditions. We'll also talk about methods for protecting yourself and your credit. I think what we've learned, and we did a focus point on this the other day, with the data breach that compromised 2.9 billion records, including a lot of social security numbers, is that nobody's going to protect you. You have to be proactive and protect yourself. So what are some methods, or rather focusing on one method, which is freezing your credit and how that can help protect you when it seems as though there are bad cyber actors all around us. We'll also touch on a story we didn't get to yesterday and answer that age-old question, is American rent rigged? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about OPEC Plus's production increases that are expected for next year. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on BKNG, which is Booking Holdings, Inc., and one on MO Altria Group, Inc. We also have some questions that came in from the comment section of the Unsock YouTube channel. We will be previewing the newsletter, running down some numbers, given that it is the end of the week. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're heading into break. And on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. We'll get to that focus point and we will answer more of your questions. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk.
With host and financial advisor Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company is falling like a rock. It's down 52%.
Invest Talk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk. Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
It was a great day for stocks. Equities finishing higher near best levels. The Dow up 55 basis points. The S&P 500 up just over 1%. The NASDAQ up 1.13%. And the Russell 2000 small caps up 67 basis points. Even with today, they finished mixed, but mostly higher for the month of August. Momentum did well. Growth and value factors all saw pretty solid gains. Money center banks, trust banks, airlines, capital goods among the best performers this month. Energy, media, precious metals, aluminum, auto rentals, cruise lines, some of the laggards. The dollar index was up 40 basis points today. Gold ended off 1.3% and crude oil settled down at 3.1% on the report from OPEC Plus, which we'll get to later, that they will proceed with planned production increases. Overall, it was a fairly uneventful session in a month end and long holiday weekend in the United States. Some focus on better tech earning takeaways, particularly surrounding AI. In addition, inflation stayed on the back burner. July core PCE came in at 20 basis points in line with consensus, though 2.6% year-over-year print was below the 2.7% estimate. Headline PCE in line with estimates as well. July personal income and July personal spending, both ahead of estimates. And the final Michigan consumer sentiment, largely in line with the one-year inflation expectation, ticking a little bit lower. On the bullish side for the week, soft landing narrative traction as initial claims, largely in line with expectations yet again. Q2 GDP growth revised up 20 basis points to 3%. August consumer confidence was the highest it's been in 6 months. And inflation, again, on the back burner as not only PCE came in slightly cooler than expected, but Q2 core PCE was revised down as well. Also some positive takeaways, including results from Dell and Best Buy. On the bearish side, NVIDIA beat and raise failed to meet the elevated expectations on the back of some blowout beats in previous quarters. Retail earnings takeaways tended to underwhelm, with Dollar General the biggest decliner after it missed and slashed guidance on slowdown in consumer spending. More talk about looming negative September seasonality, the second half of the month, the worst two-week trading period of the year, according to Goldman Sachs. More signs of protectionism in the global economy as Canada announced tariffs. Looking ahead, macro should be the big story next week. August employment report, I've mentioned a couple times this week, is the key input, in my opinion, towards whether or not there will be a 25 or 50 basis point rate cut surrounding the September FOMC meeting. Say the path of least resistance still seems to be higher over the near term on a combination of a soft landing narrative traction, a Fed pivot, and corporate and systematic fund buying. Now let's keep it moving and play another question from our voice bank.
Hello, Justin or Luke. I'm calling today about Booking Holdings, ticker symbol BKNG. This is another quality company I've had in my watch list for some time, and I think it would be a great add for my portfolio long term. Although it has a negative shareholder equity, its return on asset and its return on invested capital exceed its peer by a double. The PE is in the high 20s, but I do believe it's close to fair value given the projected growth rate over the next 2 years. So I'd like to add it while it's in this current range. Please let me know if there are any industry and or macroeconomic risks that could possibly limit the implied PE. Thank you.
So Booking Holdings, you may know some of the products that it owns, Kayak, Priceline, Booking.com. You know, this is the funny part to me is oftentimes people go to multiple of these websites to try and compare prices, but they're the same website. But anyway, regardless, they did particularly well coming out of the pandemic, as you would expect. A lot of people had savings. A lot of people wanted to go on trips. And they put that cash to good use for shareholders from 2022 into 2024. They bought back 5 million of their 40 million shares outstanding. And so if you look at a cash flow chart, it's pretty straight up and to the right, quadrupling from the end of 2021, something that we certainly like. The relative strength has been very, very high on the back of stronger than expected consumer spending. Their growth, solid, 8% over the past 5 years. From 2021 to 2023, the revenue doubled. Now, that's tapered off, certainly. $21 billion is what it was last year, projected to be about $22.9 billion. So still growing, but the rate slowing down as to be expected. People are spending down their savings. They don't have as much money to spend. So certainly they're not going to spend it on trips as much. Let's look at their margins. Gross margin, whopping 96.9% last year. Incredibly efficient. Net margin, 20.1%. I mean, it makes sense. It's a business with not a lot of overhead. It's a business that's primarily run off of its websites and taking fees off of the bookings that they do. Now, with that being said, I think that it is important to note that Growth has slowed as of this year, which is to be expected, but it probably will start to pick up next year as well. Probably the next 6 months or so will come out of this rate cutting cycle. We may come out of this rate cutting cycle, and you may start to see people become a lot looser with their purse strings. You know, I think a lot of people believe that the rate hike has cut down on consumers' ability to spend, but most people's debt is actually in fixed debt, in mortgages that were locked in for quite some time. And so the rates don't necessarily have as much of an effect on what people are paying in terms of interest as they do in investment, business investment within the economy, how easy it is to capitalize, how easy it is to get capital. And so I think moving forward, we're going to see some more expansion in terms of what people are able to spend. Sure, it's trading at 20 times forward-looking PDE, but on average, it's been trading at 24.2. So I think this looks pretty good to me. I think there is some more growth on the horizon. Now we're headed into a break. Still to come, our main focus point and more of your questions. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today is about the yuan carry trade, a rising forex strategy amidst yen weakness. Now, the popular yen carry trade has hit a major roadblock this month as Japan's currency surged, leading to a significant loss for investors. However, there's a lesser-known version of this strategy that appears to be more resilient, and that is the yuan carry trade. Now, for those who might not be familiar, carry trades are investment strategies that capitalize on differences in global interest rates. You borrow in currency with low interest rates and invest in higher-yielding assets. The yen carry trade has been a go-to for this strategy, but recent events have shown its vulnerabilities. The Bank of Japan's surprise interest rate hike since the yen, sent the yen soaring, which in turn hammered the value of investments in higher yielding currencies like the Mexican peso and the Brazilian real. So why does the yuan carry trade look more promising? Well, there are several key differences. First, China's central bank is expected to maintain its dovish monetary policy, which means they'll keep their interest rates low to support their struggling economy, which contrasts with the yen, where recent policy shifts have created more volatility. The yuan carry trade also tends to involve exporters and multinationals rather than speculators, making it less susceptible to sudden market shocks. Now, most of these trades involve holding dollar assets, especially since U.S. dollar interest rates rose above Chinese rates in 2022. And this has led Chinese exporters and multinationals to amass over $500 billion in dollar holdings, making the yuan carry trade a pretty stable but also profitable option. Moreover, the yuan isn't fully convertible as the Chinese government controls the inflow and the outflow of foreign currency. And so this limits the size of the yuan carry trade compared to yen ones, but also adds an element of stability. While yen-funded trades are spread across a wide range of global assets, most yuan carry trades are pretty concentrated in dollar assets. And that provides a cushion against the kind of turbulence that happened last month, which caused a lot of liquidation of funds that were levering up on cheap yen. Now, it's important to note that while the yuan carry trade looks resilient, it's not without its limitations. The People's Bank of China has tools at its disposal to prevent excess speculative positions from building up, and they certainly have and will continue to do that. And this means that while there are opportunities, the total size may be limited, especially relative to the yen. In essence, while the yen carry trade might have crashed this month, the yuan carry trade is showing signs of stability and profitability, especially in a market where China's central bank is likely to keep policy dovish. As always, investors should weigh the risks, but for now, the yuan carry trade seems like a solid bet for those looking to capitalize on global interest rate differentials. Now, before we move forward, I want to briefly mention our newest KPP premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow, as it always is. This week, in the KPP Insight section, we discuss bonds. We take a look at bonds, and we decompose what bond return is. In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a global crop protection company and a communications company. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on the presidential election cycle theory. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday mornings. Let's go to Peter in Rhode Island, who has a question about FHLC.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
I was looking for some healthcare exposure, and I heard yesterday you compared IYH and VHT, which were in my top three, along with FHLC. My choice now is between FHLC and VHT, which seem fairly similar on the surface. FHLC is a little bit smaller makeup of stocks, and the expense ratio is negligible at 0.08 compared to 0.10 of VHT. FHLC looks to have a slightly smaller short percentage, as well as a smaller dividend, which the dividend I'm not worried about. I would be investing for the healthcare exposure. I was just wondering your thoughts on FHLC and if this might be a good way to gain exposure to the healthcare sector.
Yeah, well, let's take a look. Given that most of these funds are going to be very similar, VHT has about 86% in large caps, and FHLC, I think when I looked at it just now, had 88%, as my computer freezes at the least opportune time. But FHLC, yeah, about 88%. So what I'm going to look at here is we're going to look at the characteristics of this portfolio. So you already mentioned dividend yield, so we don't need to look at that. The price to book of FHLC, so that would be the relative value, characteristic of FHLC is 5.22 on a price to book compared to VHT, which is your other one that you were looking at, is 4.99. So it tilts a little bit more towards value on a weighted average basis. Same with price to cash flow and price to earnings, both of which seem to be on the cheaper side for VHT relative to VHLC. Well, VHLC actually on price to earnings looks a little bit lower. Price to sales, 1.92 for FHLC, and price to sales on VHT is 1.86. Weighted average market cap, $231 billion for VHT. So right now we're looking at which one tilts towards the smaller side on a weighted average basis. And for the one you mentioned, that is 267. So taking a look at both of these, I would probably still go with VHT. The reason why is it tends to tilt more towards the value side on relative valuation multiples and more towards the smaller side. Both areas of the market that we know over a longer period of times tend to do better. You're going to get pretty much a similar cross-section of exposure to the healthcare market. But for 2 basis points more, I like the weighted average characteristics of VHT better. Thanks for the call. Monday's a market holiday, but it's not a holiday yet. We have more to do when we get back from this break, so stay with me.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello.
Hey, it's Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesac and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Curious how successful people really made it? Tune in to hear from guests like Travis Mills, a true American hero, and Nate Checkitz, co-founder of Roan. We dive deep into their stories and lessons that shape them so you can skip the trial and error and get straight to the good stuff. You can find me wherever you get your podcasts. That's Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson. Listen now.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. Oracle.com/bandwidth.
Wanted to call about Altria ticker MO. Maybe around 9 or 10 months ago, somebody had called about it. The words that were used to describe it, I believe at the time, back then, were melting ice cube, which those words kind of stuck in my mind. It has jumped recently, the round 53. They raised their dividend. Looks like they bought back some shares. I'm just wondering if this is way overbought. Looks like maybe a new level of support would be around 47-ish. If you own it, is this the time to kind of trim off of it, sell it? Or is this part of a larger upward trend? And would be interested to get your thoughts. Thank you. Appreciate all you do.
Melting ice cube. That certainly sounds like a Justinism. That doesn't sound like something I would say. But the company in question is Altria Group, ticker MO, and it is a tobacco company. And tobacco companies are not for everyone. Some people don't like owning tobacco because of health reasons. But historically, they tend to be pretty stable because cigarettes, tobacco is addictive, and people tend to not pinch back on the tobacco products when they have to cut spending elsewhere. Now, it hasn't been a big grower. Its revenue was $19.6 billion in 2018. Its revenue is projected to be $20.3 billion this year. That is an annualized growth rate of 0.6%, 0.9% on average over the past 5 years. Now, their margins have improved 61% in 2018, up to 69% in 2023. Their net margin has improved greatly in the past 3 years, from 11% to 39.6%. Last year, projected to be 43.2% this year. And so I think generally the reason why it has been depressed in a way is global regulatory concern, health concerns that have prevented it in a lot of ways from growing. Also that there were alternative products that came to the marketplace that weren't their core product, thinking Juuls and all the different array of imported Chinese disposable vapes that kids these days use. But what I think that might have done is open up an area that could lead to growth down the road. Their Enjoy product, which is one of their smokeless tobacco products, and they have other oral products as well, has been growing. But I do think, given the lack of overall growth over the past 5 years, the fact that they're trading pretty well above and close to their five-year high on a lot of these valuation multiples tells me that it is overbought. It has a consensus hold rating right now. Most people's target price is around 50. It's trading at 53.77 right now. And in spite of regulation paring back against those smokeless tobacco products, those vapes, in a lot of places, not in California where I live, you can't have flavored ones, but you can still have non-flavored ones. So I think the idea is don't make legal the ones that are quasi-marketed to children. Either way, I still think in the medium to long term, the market is not as widely expanding as it used to be because of the known effects on health, and also because of the known effects on kids within the disposable area. So they raise their dividend. Great. Good for them. They typically pay around 6, 7, 8% dividend. So it's in line with where it has been. But I think medium to long-term growth, especially given how overbought it is, I don't think it's a buy right now. Thanks for the call. Now, a little correction. We actually were talking about last week's newsletter. And so this week, we discussed in the stock ideas section, a tech company and a beverage company. We're still talking about bonds. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on 401k retirement strategy, something that is, I think, applicable to, well, everyone has a 401k. So if you're interested in learning more about this one or last one, I'll send you last one if you subscribe now. Check us out at investtalk.com. and subscribe. The newsletter comes to your inbox Saturday mornings. Now it is Friday, and on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. The 2-year treasury yield was at 3.925%. Last week, that number was 3.913. 4 weeks back, it was 3.882, and 42 weeks ago, 5.05. The 10-year treasury yield is at 3.921%. Last week, it was at 3.805. 42 weeks back, it was at 4.63, and 136 weeks ago, it was at 1.762. Gold was priced at $2,502 per ounce. Last week, that was $2,510. 42 weeks back, it was $1,935. 130 weeks ago, $1,806. Silver was priced at $28.86 per ounce today. Last week, that number was $2,985. 28 weeks ago, it was $2,280. And 123 weeks ago, it was $2,394. Oil was selling for $73.54 per barrel. Last week, it was $74.94. 38 weeks ago, it was $74.30. And 138 weeks ago, it was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.35 per gallon, a 2-cent decrease over the last week. 65 weeks ago, it was at $3.56. 113 weeks ago, it was $4.25. And 133 weeks ago, the number was $3.57. In California, it was averaging $4.63, a 4-cent increase from last week. 44 weeks ago, it was at $5.32, and 120 weeks ago, it was at $5.87. For comparison, in Nebraska, where my mom lives, today gas was averaging $3.15 per gallon. That is $1.48 less per gallon than gas in California. Now, we talk from time to time about some of the risks that investors see. And a big one is cybersecurity risk. And so it's time to consider one of the simplest but most important moves you can make for your financial security, and that is freezing your credit. With a recent lawsuit alleging that a background check company left as many as 3 billion records exposed, the spotlight is now back on credit freezes as a crucial step in protecting you from identity theft. Think of a credit freeze as locking the door on your finances. It prevents identity thieves from opening credit cards and loans in your name, keeping your financial reputation intact. After the news of the breach, Experian reported that the number of weekly credit freezes tripled. Despite the risks, many people still haven't taken the step to freeze their credit, but as more of us monitor our credit scores closely, that may be changing. The good news is that freezing your credit is easier than ever. Thanks to a 2018 federal law, it's free and relatively simple. It might take a bit more effort than locking your door, but the protection it offers is worth it. So why does it pay to freeze your credit? Well, identity theft can devastate your credit score. And not only that, it can take months, if not longer, to resolve. Just ask Thomas Hall, a finance professor in Virginia, whose wife's credit score plummeted by 400 points after a fraudster racked up over $100,000 in debt on cards they didn't even know existed. Took the Halls 8 months and countless hours of paperwork and phone calls to clear their names. And guess what? During that time, they couldn't use any of their credit cards. And even though they resolved most of it, their score still hasn't fully recovered. Freezing your credit is a straightforward process. You need to go online, request a freeze at all three major credit bureaus, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. You'll need a government ID, pay stubs, utility bills, all things you need to prove you are who you say you are. Once you set it up, the freeze can be turned on and off with just a few clicks. And don't worry, it doesn't hurt your credit score. Landlords, employers, whoever needs to can still run credit checks. And existing creditors can increase your credit limits. It doesn't affect any of that. But when you do freeze your credit, you'll need to unfreeze it if you're applying for new credit cards or new loans. By law, digital requests to lift a credit freeze must be honored within an hour. But it's still wise to plan ahead, so you should probably do it days in advance of when you need it. You might as well come across an option if you're looking about credit freezing to lock your credit instead of freezing it. Credit locks are not the same as freezing credit. They're often part of a paid subscription service that offers additional features like identity theft insurance, credit monitoring. While these services can be useful, especially for those concerned about recent data breaches, the credit freeze option is sufficient for most people as long as you stay on top of your credit report. Before paying for any credit protection service, consider the free option already available to you. Federal law requires, it requires companies to offer 2 years of free credit monitoring after a major breach. And many credit card companies also provide complimentary credit card monitoring along with their services. Freezing your credit is one of the best steps you can take to protect yourself from identity theft. It's free, it's easy, and offers peace of mind in a world where data breaches are all too common. It's Friday and the holiday weekend is upon us. But before we get there, let's answer another question.
My name is Grant. I just had a question about dividend investing versus value investing. I just wanted to hear your take on both of them, kind of what they are and the role they play in your investment retirement portfolio. I still have 30 plus years to retirement, and I'm just curious if you would prioritize one or the other as a part of your overall portfolio. And then I also had a question with having international diversity in your portfolio as well. Most oftentimes, as you know, they don't have the rate of return as growth and income stocks and ETFs, mutual funds. But when the economy goes down, takes a downturn, usually the international stocks outperform U.S. stocks as well. So I was just seeing what your take on that was, or if it's smart not have international exposure until you get closer to retirement or what. Thanks, and I'll be listening. Bye.
Okay, so let's tackle the first part first, which is dividend investing versus value investing. And I would say they serve different purposes. Dividends can inform your value investing approach because securities that are tend to have characteristics of value securities also tend to pay dividends. They're more established companies. They can be companies that are undervalued relative to the cash flow or their sales or any number of metrics. And so looking for companies that pay dividends could be a good first pass of finding value names. But putting dividends first is something unless you're looking to do some sort of liability matching here, unless you're looking to match cash flows with dividends, though dividends aren't set in stone like you can do liability matching with bonds with. I generally think people think about dividends in an incorrect way. Dividends are not free money. Dividends come out of the company, and therefore they come out of the market value of the company, which in turn comes out of the stock price. You are trading instantaneous income for long-term capital gains. That's all it is. You can do the same thing with non-dividend payers, but you can instead sell long-term gains in the time frame in which you need the money. So I think focusing only on high dividend payers is actually the wrong strategy. Historically speaking, high dividend payers don't do as well as the middle quartiles of dividend payers. We've talked about it before. We did a webinar on it. If you can go to the website and learn more there. But I think value investing is probably what's right for you. And it's right for most people because over the long term, you got 30 years to retirement. Over the long term, historically, value securities tend to outperform. And the reason why is because a lot of it is mean reversion. A lot of it is companies that are over the long term doing well, but in the interim have some sort of issue with them, whatever. But value investing at its core is finding securities that are undervalued, where you are getting more for what you are buying. And so for you, value investing, given your horizon, is the way to go. Now, your second question is about international stocks. I would contend that you are looking at a too small of a sample. Just because over the past decade, or really in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, U.S. markets have vastly outperformed international markets, primarily European markets, doesn't mean that's always the case. It was the case over the past 20 years, but going back further, there are periods when even in up markets, international stocks outperform. I would argue that you're also not certain to have international stocks outperform in downturns because the U.S. market is so entwined within the global economy now that a downturn in the U.S. does affect the rest of the world. You can have isolated downturns in France, isolated downturns in Australia that may not have widespread effects, but contagion within the U.S. is going to affect everywhere. The reason why you invest in international stocks, in emerging market stocks, is for diversity. The idea about putting together a holistic portfolio is about putting assets in there that aren't perfectly correlated. And what that does is it lowers the overall risk of the total portfolio. In up markets, some things won't go up as much as others. In up markets, some things might go down. In down markets, some things might go up. That's the idea of diversification. Uncorrelated assets or less correlated assets together. So I don't think there should ever be a time where you're not at all allocated to international markets. There are different risk drivers in different markets. Absolutely. But generally still, a rising tide is going to lift all boats, falling tide, all marinas sink. So either way, diversity is the only free lunch in investing, I think. Tilting towards international stocks, or rather investing in international stocks, is always a good idea. Now, I said it a couple times, but we'll say it again. Monday is a holiday, so we put together a fresh compilation show. We call it a Best of Caller Questions podcast, so look for that to be posted on investtalk.com and all the other platforms. Remember, InvestTalk downloads are free. And now my phone lines are open for the final time before we head into the long weekend. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Roy, and I'm calling from Fresno, California. I would like your take on the stock ENB, is the symbol. That's Enbridge Energy. And I would like to know, at current prices, if you consider a buy, hold, or sell. Thank you, and I'll listen to the answer on your podcast.
So Enbridge Energy is a Canadian midstream company. It might be the largest. Yeah, it's one of the largest North American midstream companies. And it has exposure to energy services, natural gas, gas transmission, crude oil. And I think we get questions about this company all the time. And the reason why I kind of like it is they've also expanded a bit in terms of their investment in renewables as well. So their philosophy is we don't want to be left behind. Certainly, in renewables will be a big part of the future at some point. Now, it doesn't mean that they have abandoned their core business, and they certainly haven't. But still, nonetheless, they're making those investments for a time in which perhaps crude oil isn't going to be as utilized. And so looking at this company, their revenue has fallen about 1.7% on average over the past 5 years. Their net margins have improved, though, from 6.2% projected to be 16% this year. Their gross margins have improved as well, from 30% to about 39%. Their cash flow has been improving. They have quite a bit of debt, $62 billion in debt. That's not something that I love. $67.3 billion, even more debt as of the most recent quarter end. In terms of relative strength, it plateaued in January. It's been a little bit stronger relative to the TSX more recently. But overall, I think the picture here is you're probably looking at this company because it's a large company that pays a pretty big, juicy dividend, about 6.8%. And so their dividend per share has grown from $2.68 to $3.67. That's even with new shares being issued at the end of last year. But your question was, is it a buy? Is it a sell? Is it a hold? Well, it's pretty expensive right now. It's trading at about its average price earnings over the past 5 years. Its price to book value is about 2x. So it's sitting at 1.9, which is pretty expensive for a midstream company. Overall, I would classify it as a hold. Wouldn't buy it, wouldn't sell it. Growth is certainly an issue, but they've been spending a lot of money on different avenues over which they can grow in the mid and long term. Something that I like, reason to keep it on your watch list, but I would not call it a buy right now. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off into the weekend, I have one more thing I want to talk about, and that's something that I would say hits at home for me because I rent an apartment. And so I want to tell you a story. Imagine you're part of a group, each displaying a number between 2,500 and 3,000. Once you're in the room, others will enter and choose the lowest number. The challenge is to pick the highest number while still being chosen quickly. It's a delicate balance of competition and of strategy. Now, suppose before entering, eight of you submit your numbers to a computer. And after the numbers have been submitted to a computer, the computer tells you how you should adjust your number. It suggests you choose 2850. Now, this scenario highlights an interesting question in which situations have been suggested, or rather how it has been suggested RealPage operates. And RealPage is a property software platform. And it's currently under fire by the DOJ in America for perhaps being a vehicle through which there is price fixing within the rental market. And so the software itself has about an 80% market share in multifamily housing rentals. It suggests rents on private information landlords submit. The DOJ is arguing that although landlords aren't forced to follow these suggestions, the software in essence is giving everybody a suggestion at which their price level should be, and therefore enforcing in a way what the price level will be. It is a design that is leading to landlords effectively banding together. Now, RealPage's legal team argues that the DOJ is cherry-picking quotes, but the case raises important questions about how technology is influencing market behavior. So as this lawsuit unfolds, it could set a precedent for how algorithms and software platforms are scrutinized in antitrust cases. Now, I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get them at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. Just a reminder, you haven't heard it the other three times. Monday is a holiday. There will be a Best of Caller Questions podcast. So until then, independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. We'll see you in September.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.